You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. Becomes infectious.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Mastina, a.k.a. Alonzo Beerbelly. You may know me as NBA Injury Report on Twitter, and this is episode 356. Woo-wee! On today's show, the Knicks literally sun the Atlanta Hawks all the way to death, then bring them back to life just so they can sun them once more. Final score 126-107. We're going to talk about it. David Fizdale got the kids running in the season opener. Alonzo Trier showed some explosive athleticism. Frank Ntilikina showed his elite defense in a team-high 33 minutes. Tim Hardaway Jr. exploded in front of the Garden crowd for a game-high 31 points. There's a lot of stuff I want to go over in this one. Before we start, 929-377-5103. Call that up. Leave me a voicemail, and we will get to it, if it's interesting, on an upcoming voicemail bag. So, let's get into it. First game of the season. Let's start the show. Hit it, Mark.
Yes.
Oh, you know I had to play the shofar for this one. If you don't know what that sound is that you just heard, go back to an earlier podcast, the one that I did after the first preseason game, and there is a lengthy explainer for what's going on with that shofar noise. But let's talk about the game. Let's start with a couple of general thoughts. I have three general thoughts to share about this game. First of all, it's nice to see the Knicks get a win in their home opener. Simple stuff, right? We like rooting for our teams to win. So winning's nice. But if you've been listening to the show lately, you might know that, you know, I expect the Knicks to lose a lot of games. You might know that I think it's in their best interest to lose a lot of games. But they're going to win some games. They're not going 0-82. So I am absolutely on board with winning this home opener, in case there's any question about that. It's always nice to you know, get those good feels going early, especially at the beginning of what promises to be a challenging season, especially for the new guys and the young guys, so you know they can see what MSG is all about when it's rocking. Point is, even in what is ostensibly a quote-unquote tanking season, my message for you is we should enjoy the victories when they come, whenever they come. That's the fun shit, and you shouldn't ever allow yourself to get angry over the fun shit. If it's like the last game of the season and they're jockeying for the, you know, worst record in the league and Emmanuel Mudiay plays for the first time in 3 weeks and scores 40 points and leads the Knicks to victory, then maybe you could be annoyed. Opening night, no. It was great to see. You can't lose this season. Either the Knicks lose and that's good for their draft pick, or they win and you just watch to win and that's great. Thought number two, the Knicks really pushed the pace in this one. Fizz was almost 100% true to his word about minutes distribution. If you remember earlier this preseason, he said he was going to play a lot of guys, and no one was really going to get more than 28 minutes per game, because if you could handle more than that, you weren't playing as hard as Fizz wants you to play during those 28 minutes. So let's fact check this against the first game. 11 guys got burned. That's a pretty big rotation. True to his word there. And no one got more than 28 minutes on the entire team, except for, you want to guess? I think you might know, our beautiful, sweet baby Frank, who got a little bit more than 33 minutes. Now, coming off a season where his playing time seemed to have no correlation to his on-court performance, coming off a season where, at times, he almost seemed like an afterthought, I want to underline the fact that Frank had 33 minutes, five more minutes than the next closest guy on the team, because it was really great to see that the coaching staff is trusting him this early, is leaning on him. They're going to give him a chance to develop. How much of that time comes as the primary ball handler, an ongoing developing situation. But on balance, this is a great development for us as Knicks fans and for Frank as a basketball player. Talking about pushing the pace still, the Knicks got into their transition offense on 17% of their offensive possessions, which it's early in the season, but so far that's the 68th percentile for all games played. It's a good number. That number is going to change, that 68th percentile. It's way too early for, you know, these league-wide trends to be fully established. But you saw it. They pushed the pace. They got out in the open court, and they were better for it. They ran. When they ran, they looked pretty good. Speaking of running, I am delighted to announce my play of the game. This is my third general thought about the game before we get into player breakdowns, okay? My play of the game came in the second quarter, and it started with defense, as most incredible plays do, right? Mario Hezonja's in the game, not necessarily known for his defense, but he's got a little bit of a nick for playing the passing lanes. I've seen him stick his mitts in there a couple of times to good effect. In the second quarter, he deflected a pass under the hoop and went to Hardaway, who grabbed it at about the free throw line, and he started a fast break with an outlet pass to Trey Burke, who was at half court. As soon as he passed it, he sprinted up the court, and Burke, without dribbling, passed ahead to the aforementioned streaking Tim Hardaway Jr., who took a couple of steps without dribbling and unleashed a ferocious slam. It was basically a full court give and go, and I love this play. I have a real fetish for fast break scoring plays that happen without dribbling. I don't know if it's the teacher's pet in me, but that's basically like the first thing you learn to do as a team when you're being taught basketball. You get into layup lines, and then you run a fast break. They want you to run that fast break without dribbling. So anytime that happens, I love it. I don't know if it's just been hardwired into me from my first basketball camp or whatever, but it was also a really fun play. Got the Garden going. Defense to offense. Honorable mention for play of the game goes to, of course, Alonzo Trier, who threw down just a thunderous dunk to end the third quarter. This was a nice one. Hardaway drew a double team beyond the three-point line for some reason. I know he was hot, but that felt like a little bit of an overplay strategically from the Hawks. Anyway, Hardaway drew that double team. He was kind of on the right elbow behind the three-point line. He passed it over to Alonzo Trier, who was above the break behind the three-point line. Alonzo Trier attacks the scrambling defense. He scooted right past the help defender who tried to cover for the guy who was doubling Hardaway for some reason. And then Alonzo Trier elevated over Taurean Prince and Omari Spellman and got the crowd on their feet. It was ferocious. I screamed. I cried a little bit. I rolled around on the floor. Clyde unleashed the full homerific power of Clyde. He shouted yes in ecstasy while he watched the replay, while the Garden crowd was erupting. And it felt a little bit like a special moment at the beginning of a career that I'm not going to say is going to be special yet, but it's certainly promising and has a hint of magic, I think you'll agree, given that Alonzo Trier was an undrafted free agent. Speaking of Trier, let's talk about the rookies. But first, I want to talk to you guys about something that's very important to me, and that's Blue Chew. You know, it's for sex. Blue Chew is for sex. It's for having good sex. You know, you might think your sex is okay now, but let's be honest, it's probably pretty bad, right? You're a sports fan, right? You're fat, you're out of shape, you live your life vicariously through professional athletes, and that goes all the way down to your donger. But you can get extra confidence in bed by going to BlueChew.com. By the way, you spell blue, B-L-U-E, like the color. BlueChew.com. It brings you the first chewable. You go, ah, nah, nah, nah. That's how you chew it. With the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis. So you know that's good stuff, right? Everyone knows about Viagra and Cialis. It's just like that, only you chew it. And because you chew it, you can eat it even on a full stomach, and it'll work fast, not like a pill. So you're with someone, and oh my god, they actually want to sleep with you. You're like, I never thought this would happen. But you carry around your blue chew in your wallet. Maybe it's a couple years old. I don't know. Maybe don't take a couple-year-old blue chew. Check with their, you know, warnings and all that stuff. But you take it out, you're like, oh my god, this is actually going to happen. And you go, ah, 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 and you eat it, and then boom, magic boner. BlueChew.com. Get your first shipment free when you use our special promo code. It's locked on. Just pay $5 shipping. That's it. Again, that's BlueChew.com. Promo code locked on. Alonzo Trier continues to be the most pleasant surprise of this young season. To talk about it in quasi-mystic terms, Trier looks both like he belongs and, perhaps more importantly, no, not more importantly, but equally important, he looks like he knows he belongs. He didn't look nervous at all, unlike, say, Kevin Knox, who is significantly younger than Trier and will be totally fine, but still, just as a comparison, it was notable how comfortable Alonzo Trier looked in his role. And, you know, he did some dancing in isolation, but he didn't go full tin cup and keep forcing something that wasn't there. His handle still looked tight tonight. That handle looks legit against NBA competition, quasi-NBA competition in the Atlanta Hawks. And the kid has some hops, man. I mean, we talked about him viciously sunning the Hawks to death to end the third, but he also had a nice chase down block in the fourth and another block to close out the game. The kid can get up. He can get up. In 26 minutes, he finished with 15 points on 5-9 shooting. That's good efficiency right there. 1-for-3 from downtown. He made all four of his free throws. He was trying to get to the rim. Got 4 rebounds, 0 assists, and 3 turnovers. So not the best there, but struggled a bit distributing. But the kid, he is a shooting guard. Like, this is what Alonzo Trier is, very obviously. He's not a point guard. He's not a playmaker, though it would be great if he could develop some playmaking skills. I'm not saying that's impossible. But his bread and butter is getting buckets. And if he can get them efficiently, like he did on Wednesday night, he's going to have a strong career. I don't know how I feel about yet, if it's going to be as a starter, multiple MVP, bench guy. But I think he looks absolutely like an NBA player. I think the Knicks would be wise to shore him up soon to a 3-4 year contract, the same way they did for Mitchell Robinson, at as little money as they possibly can. I feel bad saying that because I want everyone to get theirs. But from a roster building standpoint, I think that's what the Knicks should do. Caveat over this whole episode, everything that we saw was against the Atlanta Hawks, who are a bad team. It was against the Atlanta Hawks playing at their worst. As bad as they aren't as bad as they looked on Wednesday night. But still, NBA competition, the games are real. It's only one game. We can't draw any definitive conclusions about anything, but we're keeping track of trends. We're pointing out things we notice. It is what it is. I just want you to know that I know what's going on. I know it's just one game, so calm down, all right? Let's talk about Frank Ntilikina. Frank Ntilikina. Parira Frank Ntilikina. Frank Ntilikina. Parira Frank Ntilikina. What can you say about Frank that hasn't been said about every point guard's worst nightmare? Know what I'm saying? Playing suffocating defense. Just, you know, this is the new norm for Frank, or the old norm. Meet the new norm, same as the old norm. Know what I'm saying? He looks even better this year on defense, albeit, again, against a woebegone Hawks team, playing particularly poorly, but just a bunch of defensive highlights all throughout the game. He stopped a Torian Prince drive early in the first, forced a very awkward layup that missed the rim entirely. This next play I liked a lot. He got over a really good screen at the top of the arc, and Torian Prince, he was covering Torian Prince, who went around the screen. He thought he had an open shot, so he started to pull up for the shot. And then he was surprised, borderline shocked, certainly terrified, to see Frank Ntilikina was on his hip, rising up with him to block the shot. So Torian Prince tried to pass it off, but no one was there, and he threw it almost directly to Hardaway, who took it the other way on the break and kind of stumbled into a pull-up transition three, which a lot of people made fun of. I like that shot, especially since all their shots were mid-range shots up to that point. The execution was off, though. He stumbled trying to kind of stop on a dime. So at that point, you probably shouldn't have shot it. But I like the thought. Didn't mind it. Anyway, point being, that all started that fast break transition offense, which is good offense. We want to live off that offense from a wonderful defensive play by Frank getting over that screen, forcing the turnover. He blocked once a Nick, always a Nick, Jeremy Lin in the first quarter, which he wasn't credited with on the box score, but I swear to God that happened. I don't know what's going on there with the box score, but I'm telling you that happened. Then he blocked a Poitras dunk attempt in the fourth. I love Frank Block so much. I said I have a fetish for fast breaks where people don't dribble and then they score. I also have a fetish for guards who can block shots. It makes you just so much more dangerous defensively as a team. You got that. And Frank's like a quasi-rim protector out there. I know he played the three for large stretches, but you guys know what I'm saying. It's absurd how good this kid is on defense. He had three steals and just seemed to be getting his hands on everything. Typical Frank shit. If you're looking for improved offense, there were signs of aggression. He crossed over Torian Prince in the third for a nice driving layup. He called his own number 7 times. Not a lot, but not nothing. Only made 2 of those 7 shots, but baby steps, people. Talking about his handle, this is something we were very concerned about last season. Still needs work, but looks much more comfortable with his handle, and it looks absolutely capital I improved, I think, without a doubt. He faked Alan Bembry out of his shoes. He missed the pull-up mid-range corner jumper after that, but he's showing these moves that he clearly has been working on. Really pleased with the progress he's made with his handle since last season, and something that he's always been good at, but he showed again in Wednesday night's game against Brooklyn, was his court vision, his passing vision. He was only credited with 1 assist, but he had a couple of nasty passes, including a no-looker into the paint for what I could have swore was a Noah Vonleh layup, but NBA.com didn't have it listed as an assist, so maybe Noah got fouled on that play. I don't remember exactly what happened, but I know he was at the top of the arc and just whipped a no-look pass, daggered it to Vonleh right under the rim. It was great. So this is basically what I expected out of him on offense early on. He's going to be far from a finished product this year, but he's going to improve. I think he's going to keep improving a little bit year over year on offense. He's never going to be, you know, Michael Jordan or Alonzo Trier on offense. But he's just going to keep getting better and better. I think he looked improved in this one. He looked much more comfortable compared to last year. Great first game out of Frank again. Love to see that the coaching staff trusted him and gave him a team-high 33 minutes. Nice job, Frank. I want to talk about Kevin Knox, the youngest Knick to ever play a game. But first, just want to remind you that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily local sports podcast network. Kevin Knox, like I just said, is the youngest Knick to ever suit up and play a game, narrowly edging out Frank Ntilikina's record from last year, and it showed in this one. He was nervous as hell. He started the game with 2 ugly early misses, then, in a nice veteran show of savvy, at his very young age, he was like, that was bad and hideous, those first 2 shots. I'm going to take it to the hole. He took it to the hole. He took Dembry off the dribble with a nice little crossover near the baseline. Got to the rim, drew a foul, and then missed both free throws because he was a very nervous 19-year-old. He finished a ghastly, but in my opinion, understandable, 4 from 16 from the field. He was 1 for 5 from 3. He did have 2 steals and a block. And only 2 fouls. So that was some nice intangible work that he did there. Well, there's some tangibility, right? I just read some numbers in the box score. He didn't let his poor shooting stop him from participating in the other aspects of basketball that you must participate in, whether or not your shot is falling. And he did this all in 23 minutes. If you wanted to panic about it, be a dick about it, you could say to yourself, holy shit, he's a tall Emmanuel Mudiay. He knows how to get to his spots, but he can't finish at all. But if you want to keep calm and not make an ass of yourself, you can recognize that Kevin Knox has a ton of natural ability. He's got great physical tools. He can get to his spots easily, but he's incredibly young and prone to struggling in general because of that. And especially, specifically, on opening night in Madison Square Garden in front of the home crowd, right? Funny enough, he admitted after the game that he was nervous as shit. I don't have the direct quote in front of me, but he was like, yeah, I had bubble guts. I was very nervous. So you could see all the reasons that he could wind up being a great pick, but you didn't see him put it all together this night, which feels reasonable to me. Does that feel reasonable to you? I think the crowd is going to be patient with him, too. I think the Garden is going to give him his time. Thankfully, they gave him a huge ovation when he was introduced, which felt very nice after the way he was treated on draft day with all those boos from the fake crowd that ESPN plants there for, you know, their ratings. Let's be honest. I don't want to go down that road. That's a little bit too Trumpy. Let's talk about Mitchell Robinson. Round out our rookie talk. He turned his ankle a bit early on. He only played 1 minute and 18 seconds. The Knicks said he was available for the second half, but they chose to keep him out to be safe. They didn't need him. I think that was the wise call. Because he only played 1 minute and 18 seconds, I'm giving him an incomplete. Not really much to say about Mitchell Robinson in this one. There's a fair amount to say, though, about Tim Hardaway Jr. He killed it. The forgotten man, the much maligned $18 million man. He did a really nice job driving to the rim in the first quarter after initially settling for like 8,000 mid-range shots in a row. And then he just went nuclear in the first half. Highlighted by, for me, not so much a scoring possession, but he had just a great pass. He was on the fast break and he went behind the back, no look, bounce pass to Kanter for a slam dunk. A slam dunk right through the basketball hoop. Saying slam dunk sounds so dorky. But anyway, that was one of my favorite plays from Hardaway Jr. in this one. I also liked, defensively, he drew a charge in the third on Alex Len, who couldn't slow down his giant ogre body on a fast break. He just went barreling into Tim, who had positioned himself right above the restricted area. Nice job there, Tim A. It felt like he made every shot at one point. He was not great, but not terrible from downtown. He went 3 for 9 from downtown. But overall, he scored 31 points on 22 shots. So that's great efficiently. More importantly than that, he made all 8 free throws. 8 free throws is an excellent number of free throws to take. He did a great job to get into the rim. We've said this on the show over and over again. Tim Hardaway Jr. is at his best when he's getting to the rim. Not only that, talking about his scoring, great to see him have an efficient night because he struggled with that so frequently, so often, so early in his Knicks career. But he had a great overall game. 6 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 steals. That's a great fucking game. Clearly was the Knicks' best player on the night. He did a great job. Frank did a great job on defense. Hardaway did an equally great job on offense. Speaking of great games, Noah Vonleh, man, had a great stretch in the third quarter particularly. The Knicks were in the process of giving up a huge lead, and he came in for Kanter, and it seemed to change the flow of the game. He generally made a pest of himself on defense. He was banging bodies under the rim. He cleaned up trash around the rim, grabbed 10 rebounds to go along with 12 points, a team high plus 22 in only 16 minutes. And again, he came in, and the Knicks really started rolling in that third quarter after, you know, maybe just getting a little bit lazy, a little bit complacent, building up that huge lead going into halftime. And he also had 3 assists, Noah Vonleh, out of the backup center spot. Did a great job filling in for Mitchell Robinson, who couldn't play after twisting his ankle. Just a really nice 16 minutes from Noah Vonleh tonight. So if he has a couple more showings like this, it's going to make you feel a little bit better about stretching out Joakim Noah. Trey Burke, not much to say, but a nice efficient game from Trey Burke, who scored 14 points on 6 of 11 shooting, 2 for 3 from downtown. I'd like to see him pull the trigger maybe a couple more times, but can't complain too much. The Knicks overall, speaking of mid-range, had 33 three-pointers. That's a nice number. Thank you, David Fizdale. I'll back off a little bit now, all right? But going back to Trey Burke, he also had 4 assists, 3 rebounds. My favorite Burke moment came on the defensive side of the ball. He forced Jeremy Lin into a timeout, just pestering him. Lin was like, I don't know what to do. Timeout. I can't keep dribbling. And then he screamed. He let out a primordial scream, Trey Burke. He was very pleased with his defense, as he should have been. He let out just a passionate, intense scream, and it got the crowd really into it. I loved that moment. Speaking of passionate intensity, Enes Kanter drew 4 loose ball fouls off of missed shots in the first half alone. Just positioning his big body in the right place. Guys couldn't deal with him. They tried to throw him out of the way. He drew fouls. Nice job, Enes, there. Very Kanter-y hustle to go along with his typical outstanding work on the boards, 11 rebounds. He had a really nice offensive move. I forget when this was, but he put Miles Plumlee in the spin cycle, went by baseline, had a nice reverse layup. You know, but he's still Kanter. He played a big role in that lackadaisical start to the third quarter that saw Atlanta chop just a whole grip of points off their deficit, to use some Cali slang. Mario Hezonja got the Knicks some needed buckets late in the fourth to keep the lead around 20. Garbage time, but, you know, he put some buckets in, but then he just bombed away 1,000 shots in a row and he got hot. So, not much to say there. The Mario Hezonja experience, everyone. Closing thoughts. Just what a great way to start the season. The Knicks recorded their second highest scoring quarter in franchise history with 49 points in the second. That was so much fun. That stat was courtesy, actually, of Basketball Reference on MSG's telecast of the game. I thought that was great. I haven't seen BasketballReference.com reference too much during telecasts of games, and everyone uses them. So shouts to you, Basketball Reference. You made it! An incredibly fun game all around. Lots of great stuff from the kids. The next game is Friday against the Nets at MSG East, a.k.a. the Barclays Center. I'm looking forward to it. You should be too. What a great way to start the season. That's it for this episode of Locked On Knicks. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to the show if you have not already. A lot of times these shows come out late at night, but they're not posted on Posting and Toasting or on my Twitter till the next morning. And some people are like, I didn't get the show till after I commuted. Well, you would have got the show if you subscribed to the show. That's why you subscribe. It also helps us out with advertisers. So do that if you got a minute. Tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks. Help us grow. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks or NBA Injury Report. Be chill to each other. You're going to mess that up sometimes, but then remember it and try to be chill the next time. Spay and neuter your pets. No excuses. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it all the way down. Always salt the pasta water. Take that. For data, Biggie's better than Pac.